Hey everyone, and welcome to this edition of Snake Oilers, the podcast we do here at Risky Biz HQ a few times a year, where vendors come onto the show to pitch you their wonderful wares. This whole thing is sponsored, and that means everyone you're about to hear from in this podcast paid to be here. If you're looking for the regular weekly podcast, just go back to one of the other podcasts in this feed that has a number on it. So we're going to hear from three vendors today, Push Security, Knock Knock, and iVerify. Push Security is essentially a browser plugin that is extremely useful in preventing identity-based attacks, phishing, account takeovers, and so on. It's a much more compelling pitch than you're expecting, I promise you that. Knock Knock is our second snake oiler, and a lot of you would remember that for the last couple of years, I've been praying for someone to build a product that dynamically firewalls all your enterprise crap based on a user's SSO status, and Knock Knock have built exactly that. And we even use it at Risky Business to lock up our content management system and to dynamically IP restrict SSH to people who are actually signed in. You can firewall off your Confluence, your Citrix, your crummy web apps, whatever. But when a user is authed, they can access it like normal. It's magical. We love it. And then we're going to hear from iVerify, which originally spun out of Trail of Bits, but is its own company now. And iVerify is a mobile security suite that actually identifies real threats. They caught Pegasus in the wild with this tool, and you can use this as a substitute for something like MDM too for compliance purposes. So yeah, if you need a mobile security package for your employees, either because you're attracting serious attackers or for compliance purposes, it's one to look at closely. But first, let's get into it with Push Security. And I really think this one is a compelling pitch. At the moment, enterprise security teams don't really have much visibility or control over how identities are being used, which when you think about it is more than a little bit nuts. We've got EDR, we've got NDR, but we can't tell when someone enters their SSO password into a phishing site, right? So it just seems maybe that's a bit out of whack. So Push Security has developed a browser plugin that does identity security. And you might think, a plugin, but the browser is the ingress point for identity information. If you want to tackle identity-based threats, that's where you need to be. Adam Bateman is the co-founder and CEO of Push Security, and he joined me to pitch Push, and here's what he had to say. And just as a disclosure, I'm an advisor to Push Security and an enthusiastic one at that. Here's Adam.
When people imagine what an identity attack surface looks like, I think they think about a centralized identity store, and then every employee has one identity which accesses everything, and that's definitely the state you want to get to. But the reality is when you actually go and deploy and you look at the data, you end up with your primary IDP with like GitHub hanging off of that and Salesforce hanging off of that and a bunch of other applications that are out there as well. So the whole thing's like a big mess. It's a little bit like, you have your network diagram, looks all pretty, but then you go off and do a big phone scan or like ACID discovery scan and actually it kind of looks a lot different. So exactly, if you're in the browser, you're seeing everything that everyone's logging into and what you can see there. So we have two different parts of the platform. One side is detection and response. So we actually draw telemetry from the browser and you can use that to detect and respond to different attacks. And then the second side is more of a proactive side. So you'd actually map out what identities are being used. So we can observe as employees create or use identities, map out which ones are vulnerable. And then we can also do things like app control to stop people from accessing certain applications you don't want them to and things like that.
Okay, so let's start with the detection and response part of this. I mean, you and I have spoken about this before, away from interviews and whatever. And it's pretty cool. Like once you're in the browser, you can actually do an awful lot. But why don't you start by just explaining, what you're doing on the detection and response side?
Yeah, definitely. So a really simple example just to start with, and we can go into some more advanced use cases as well. But if you think about like you've got your SIM and the big three data sources are probably EDR, network traffic, logs. Like they're the ones that are really well understood. When you add browsers to that, it gives you something pretty unique and different. So for example, let's say that there's a phishing attack against 50 employees inside the organization and you want to know who's been hit by that. So if you look at your network EDR log data, it's going to show you 50 people visited a phishing site. What we can do is actually say, no, 50 people submitted their IDP creds, their Okta, Microsoft creds into that. And by the way, this is also shared with these other 20 apps. So once the attacker's got access to those credentials, they can then do password spraying or credential stuffing and own everything else as well. So you actually get a level deeper. We actually then take that level further. So one of the things we have is SSO password protection. So the browser extension will actually observe when an employee logs into the primary IDP and then pin the password to the official login screen so it can't be entered anywhere else. And so you can configure it depending on which way you want to go. If you put it into sort of full mode, it will completely stop corporate password reuse. So it means that the employees can't reuse their, say, Okta credentials in any other app at all.
And before anyone freaks out about you looking at these passwords, you just hash them and then take the back end of the hash, and that's how you're checking, right?
Absolutely, yeah. So one of our very early customers was actually a German fintech who really helped us with the privacy side. So we've engineered all that stuff very, very firmly into the platform. So yeah, we do exactly that. The extension does everything locally. So it'll observe the password as it gets logged in and then take a hash of it, stores it as a K-anonymized hash, so basically a hash chopped in half, and then stores that inside the browser sandbox. And then we use that to do a diff, basically, against any other future login, and then we can block and take action based upon that.
I mean, what's funny, right, is already what you just described, which is a very small part of this product. Like, I guarantee you there's, like, a lot of people listening to this right now who are like, well, we should get it just for that.
Yeah, man. I mean, like, honestly, credential phishing is still a massive problem. And you can do stuff like domain categorization, and you can use, like, AI, and you can do all these good features, but it's just a really simple approach. It's like, this password is important and it cannot be used anywhere else. So you can't enter it into a phishing site. You can't reuse it against different corporate apps. Done, right? It just takes that category out, like, really, really strong control.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great one. But you're also doing stuff like fish kit detection and all of that usual, you know, cool stuff you can do once you're in the browser.
Yeah, absolutely. So there's some really cool attacks. Like, I mean, Evil Jinx is the big popular one that people are talking about. But there's also Evil VNC, where you run VNC sessions inside the browser and fish people that way. And basically it allows you to steal, you know, MFA tokens and session tokens and those sorts of things as well. So we'll detect those sorts of phishing kits running inside the browser and block those, fire all those back to a webhook so you can push that into your SIM or your SOAR and you can gain access to it. We also do stuff like clone site detection. So we can actually observe as someone logs into an application, we take a fingerprint of the app, of a legitimate app, and know what that looks like. And then we can actually detect and block when there are slight variations of that. That's really interesting because if attackers come along and cloned like an important page, intranet app, or, you know, IDP or whatever, we can then see that that is a potential phishing attempt in a much more generic way. But it also gives us much more generic detection around the phishing tools, because if you're using something like Evil Jinx and you're relaying a legitimate page through a framework like that, it modifies it slightly and we can pick that up more generically as well.
Yeah. Now, you got to tell everyone about the stuff you're doing with the header injection in Okta, because that's really cool too.
Yeah, so session theft detection, this is. So obviously, if you're in a position then where you've locked down the credentials, you can't gain access to, the next thing that attackers are going to do is just directly steal the session token. And once you've got that, you can relay that against the applications and you can gain control. This is a massive problem. So what we do is just a really, really simple, again, technique. It's always the simple ones that work. And the browser extension will actually effectively inject a one-time token into the header of an HTTP request, right? So as an employee authenticates, we inject the one-time token into the browser, and then that token then appears inside the IDP logs. So you can see them in your Okta or Microsoft 365 logs. What you can then do is use the SIM, look through the logs, and you basically just look for two matching session IDs from two different requests where one doesn't have our token, right? So effectively, it's like the browser extension is doing like a stamp of approval to say this is an official session that came from an employee. If you then discover one that doesn't have that, it's clearly session hijacking.
Yeah, it's funny, man. Like, just talking to you about this, it reminds me a little of, like, and I know it's a completely different product set, different problem set and everything, but like when I first started talking to Island and people would be like, oh, an enterprise browser, that sounds dumb. And it's dumb until you actually think about what you can do with it. And like, this is the same sort of thing, right? Like, a browser extension for security, that sounds stupid until you think about literally like the million ways that you could use it to make life less miserable.
Yeah, 100%. And that's the thing. The attacks are moving inside the browser, right? If you do a phishing attack, that's inside the browser. And so actually moving inside the browser makes a ton of sense. And you start to see people doing things like, you know, you're having to do things like TLS interception to try and get into the stream between the browser and the application. Why not just move inside the browser and do it directly inside there? So yeah, it's really effective. It's a very, really interesting area.
Well, and especially when you look at the average log set coming out of an IDP isn't really that illuminating.
Yeah, I mean, so we do integrations back with IDPs and pull those in as well.
But well, it's illuminating once you've got something to compare it to. What I'm saying, though, is on their own, like, they're not all that, you know?
Yeah, well, I think there's a couple of issues there, is that if there's a group like Scat Spider or any of the others, they tend to go directly for the IDP. And so if you're in a position where you go, the attacker goes in and compromises a privileged identity straight away, they're going to go in and start turning off different logs to hide what they're doing. And so if you're just relying on the IDP logs, you're relying on the logs from a compromised device. And so you're not going to see everything and you're kind of blinded. So another reason moving into the browser is kind of interesting. So what some people are actually using our extension for is exactly that. You can stream back every login event that happens inside the browser back to a SIM. And so if there is a malicious event like that, you can actually correlate that back and say, well, this event, like disabling logs, didn't come from a legitimate employee's browser. It came from somewhere else. So you can start to pick up that kind of that activity as well.
Yeah. Now, you know, we've spoken about the detection response. Let's talk about the more proactive, preventative stuff because, yeah, there's a lot you can do once you start collecting this sort of information from browsers.
Yeah, so if you're thinking about stopping identity attacks and you're looking to defend your whole identity infrastructure, there's two parts, right? It's reactive, we've just spoken about detection and response, but then there's a proactive piece and actually doing hardening. So all of that's bundled together in a single product. So on the proactive side, we observe identities as they're being created or used. And the browser extension, because it can observe network traffic, we can actually determine if an identity is behind SAML or behind IODC, or if it's a password login. We can then observe and actually see, do they hit the MFA prompts? What MFA method are they using? Is it phishable? And all that stuff gets reported back up to a dashboard. We can then see stuff like whether it's vulnerable to cred stuffing, password reuse, and just, you know, general things like whether that password's been leaked as part of a prior breach and a ton of stuff like that as well. So what you end up with in the dashboard is just this full graph of, okay, this is the percentage of apps that are off SSO, these are the ones that are on SSO, and then people can actually use to move those over onto SSO themselves. We did a lot of stuff around that. That obviously helps you build out like a really good app inventory, so you can see everything everyone's logging into and putting that data in as well. There's a bit of a freebie in there. And then we do kind of access enforcement. So you can actually start to say which apps people are allowed to access, and you can actually put out block screens to stop people from getting access to particular applications.
Yeah, this ain't a Dropbox place, buddy. What are you doing? Get the hell out of here.
Yeah, like one of the really popular use cases that people have been using it for is things like, you know, there's been a big craze around, you know, ChatGPT or whatever. And so you can actually drop
pasting,
a banner.
Pasting corporate documents into them and asking for them to be summarized, basically.
Exactly that, yeah. So you can show a banner inside the screen, inside the browser. And so when an employee goes to visit the login or sign up page to one of those applications, you can just drop a banner across the top of the app, just reminding people and saying, hey, you can use this application, but please don't put company data in here. And here's our Gen AI policy as more of a reminder. And you can actually tier that up to get more aggressive if you want to and make it a full block screen and say, nope, you can't access this at all.
All right, Adam Bateman, Push Security, killer pitch, man. Got to say, very cool stuff. Really enjoyed that. Great to talk to you again, and we'll be doing it again soon, I'm sure.
Thanks very much, man.
That was Adam Bateman of Push Security there. And you can find them at pushsecurity.com. Our second snake oiler today is Knock Knock, and I'm pleased to say Risky Biz is actually a Knock Knock user. So regular listeners would have heard me say a bunch of times that what we really need to deal with a bunch of the threats that are plaguing enterprises lately is a product that we can plumb through to our IDPs that can do dynamic firewalling. So think of something like RDP. Wouldn't it be great if you could dynamically IP restrict it to users based on their authentication status? So if someone tries to hit that port, it's closed, but if they're logged in via their IDP, it's magically open. You know, would this be a useful thing to put in front of Confluence or Citrix or all the other horrible enterprise crapware that's hanging off your perimeter gathering flies? Your custom apps? Yes, basically yes, a very useful thing. So Dave Kempe from Knock Knock has built exactly this solution. So yeah, Knock Knock handles that plumbing for you from the IDP out to firewalls. And again, a disclosure, I'm in discussions with Knock Knock to be an advisor to them as well. But without further delay, here is Dave Kempe talking all about Knock Knock.
We're after a pragmatic solution that people can use to ring fence their current environments, drop in easily with a low amount of sysadmin effort, a low sort of barrier to entry, but solves a very immediate, very real problem people have, which is that they're overly exposed. They're absolutely overly exposed. And that can be from solutions they've picked for vendors that should know better, or from solutions they've picked which for no sort of organizational reason other than the guy retired or they ran out of funding or whatever it might be is still in the wrong place.
Yeah. I mean, I think about this and I think about the problems that it solves, and there's kind of two product categories that it bumps up against, right? One is the, you know, these sort of access gateways into production environments, right, which are designed to sort of ring fence prod. You know, that's one area where you could do this instead. I mean, you might not get the centralized logging and all of that sort of stuff, you know, with this, but you can do that. Like, if you want to put SSH behind this, you absolutely can. The other area, SSH database access, whatever. The other area where it makes sense is in places where people might install an identity-aware proxy, but they can be fiddly. And even once you get them up, sometimes the origin is often left exposed, so you need to do some firewalling there anyway. This just seems like it gets you the same thing, but a lot easier, right? So is that typically where people are, is that how customers are thinking about this as sort of substitutes for those two things?
Yeah, absolutely. So the large benefit is that because of the sort of distributed and agent-based approach, we can have a sort of unlimited flexibility in what we can integrate with. Your favorite web server, Apache, Nginx, HAProxy, applications, WordPress, whatever it might be, databases, SSH, firewalls, your favorite devices. These things can all be integrated with. And what typically happens is that a customer has a particular use case. They have an old website that they need to lockdown. They have a copy of Confluence that shouldn't be on the internet, but still need people from outside to access it. Those are people they can't deploy a VPN to. Those are people they maybe have other problems getting to. So they pick one thing, they get it deployed, and then they realize, wait a minute, we can use this for all sorts of other stuff that we were previously using other solutions for, because the simple and pragmatic approach ends up being easy to understand, easy to roll out to users, low barrier to entry for users, and it becomes bigger and bigger and bigger.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%. I mean, like, as I said at the intro, like, this is the sort of thing that kind of feels like a halfway solution. And then you go, well, hang on, it's going to actually achieve what we need it to achieve. And we can put it here, 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 oh, there, there, there. And that's what happened to us when we looked at it, is we started realizing all of the different places we could use it.
Yeah, absolutely, 100%. And I think typically part of the journey customers will need to go on is this mindset approach of looking at their system from the outside, understanding that attack surface, and then going, well, wait a minute, if we just sort of locked these things down, what else do we need to do? Like, and I think you actually get this kind of moment where it's like, well, can it be that simple? You know, can I sleep at night? Hopefully, you know.
I mean, it's not going to solve your vuln management problem, but it kind of mitigates a lot of it, right? So one example that, you know, when I was talking about this before you'd even announced the product, right, and I didn't know that you guys were building this, was something like, you know, your FortiGates or your Citrix gear at the edge of your network. You can absolutely use this to restrict access to those things so that even if they have OTA in them, no one can touch them unless they're an authenticated user.
100%. So Citrix is a good example. The attack surface of that is giant, and it's had a whole series of very widely publicized vulnerabilities. So why not just completely block it absolutely until a simple gateway can allow it? And we have customers where that's definitely their plan and what they're going through the implementation phase of that now, the centralized authentication, the SSO integration, and then opening a port to, you know, let people actually access Citrix and then continue on is actually, you know, reasonably easy for users to manage. They click here, they click there, and then they're on.
Ask a question. In that scenario, like, where is the firewall? Are you actually instrumenting a firewall on the Citrix box, or is there something usually in front of it?
Yeah, we would generally have a reverse proxy in front of the Citrix virtual hosts. So citrix.mycompany.com is actually connected to terminated at HAProxy. That then backends into the Citrix NetScaler environment or whatever it might be, and Knock Knock is controlling an ACL on that reverse proxy.
Yeah, nice, nice. And I believe also, like, this is a really hilarious example, but you've got a customer at the moment who is setting it up so that the firewall on their Fortinet device is actually going to control access to its own VPN ports, right? So they're actually using Knock Knock to instrument a firewall on the thing, which
That's
is
right, yeah.
quite hilarious, right?
We're adding a feature to firewalls that doesn't exist in many cases.
Which and is this, SSO integration. Right?
That's right. Yeah. So exactly. So we're bolting this feature on, and Knock Knock, the Knock Knock agent is able to dynamically add and remove people from firewall objects. And the feature doesn't exist. Firewall vendors will only be incentivized to add the feature for their stack. They won't be incentivized to add a set of tools. And typically people don't just have one vendor. They have many different vendors and virtual hosts. And, you know, okay, they've got a firewall that needs this feature. But then after that, they've got virtual hosts that need this feature. They've got websites and all these other kind of things that need this. So Knock Knock allows them to do all of those things with the one tool set and might look simple, but then allows all these extra integrations to be from the one place.
Now, from a user experience, it's pretty straightforward, right? Which is, if they want to open up these ports, all they need to do is be authenticated, load a browser tab, and hit a Knock Knock URL, which will then spit out a list of all of the stuff they can access. And, you know, through the process of actually hitting that page, you know, that's how Knock Knock collects their IP and makes the necessary changes to grant people access, right?
That's correct. It's a straightforward approach. The source address is updated in the back end of your choosing, and then the access is allowed for a period of time. A timer starts, and the SSO integration or any other we support SSO, local users, and LDAP, and we add two-factor authentication on top of those legacy authentication systems. For SSO, we outsource that MFA to the SSO provider. And then groups are provided by that. Groups are mapped to ACLs, and different groups of users are given access to different resources depending on which groups they're in, and away they go. So from a user's point of view, they literally will click a button and a firewall will open, because that button authenticates them to their SSO provider. They've already logged in and away we go. And, you know, I mean, it's one-click firewalling. Yeah. I don't know if someone has a patent on that. Amazon, hopefully they don't, but it's a one click operation, and then you're on. And that could be simpler.
So are people, I mean, I know it's early days, right? But what are people mostly applying this to so far?
Legacy websites. Yeah. Confluence.
Yeah.
It's not legacy, but hey, it's...
You could throw this at like your file transfer appliance. You could throw this, 100%. You know, which would get tricky when you've got unauthenticated users who need to do stuff or whatever, but that's just one example. You could throw it at your payroll system, for example. Those things are just ready to get owned, right? Like, I had a chat with a guy from Kroll a while ago who's predicting they're the next big category of systems that are going to get mass owned on the internet, and I think he's probably right. But all of those creaky web applications, you can lock them up pretty good.
Yeah, absolutely. And file transfer is actually definitely one that we have a number of customers rolled out with. And there are ways you can get around having, sharing links work and all those things from a reverse proxy URL matching point of view. The ACLs don't just have to be I can get in or not. They can be I can do certain things with an adequately featured reverse proxy like HAProxy. You can even block HTTP verbs. You know, we've turned web pages read only for certain people. You know, just block, you know, a GET request or a POST request, however you want it to work. So you can be a fair bit more nuanced about that. You can obviously have URL matching and other things, and away you go. So it doesn't have to be all or nothing either.
Yeah, and do you expect people will start throwing it at stuff like SSH?
We already have.
Because, you know, the traditional thing with SSH is maybe like restricted to an ASN or whatever, but this is so much better.
Absolutely. We already have that. One of our large customers, Massive Australian Telco, uses that for SSH jump box access over the internet. They have, you know, roaming teams of network engineers rolling out things around the world, and this is the way they've chosen to do that, and it works great. They've got SSH restricted to Knock Knock, and then the SSH has 2FA on it, and they use that as a bastion host and jump on from there. And they find that's a fantastic mix of usability and flexibility for their tool set.
Yeah, and it's not like you need to VPN an SSH connection, you know, which is always
exactly.
That hurts my brain a little. Yeah,
it's already encrypted. It's already strongly authenticated, but you just don't want to sit it on the internet.
Now, just quickly, I want to talk about the history of the product because it does have an interesting history. It was initially developed, I believe, for the broadcast industry as a way for broadcasters to make video streams available when, you know, VPNs might introduce latency and sort of problems and whatever. Often it's a fire hose of UDP, right? So you created this product initially to allow broadcasters to offer, you know, streaming video just over the raw internet in a way that was sort of IP restricted and put at least some guardrails around that content.
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. And this is not for consumer use. This is for back-end production purposes.
Yeah, yeah. This is when you've got a field crew who's got to get some video back to head office, right?
Exactly. They have low ability to modify the environment they turn up to. They turn up to a racetrack or a sports stadium, and they've got to deal with the equipment they have. They need to get the job done quickly. They need the video to be low latency so they can add audio to it so that you can then broadcast it. And Knock Knock is a perfect fit for that. And we've had it rolled out for many years in that environment. And our original installation is actually still going strong to this day. The product has evolved significantly since that original time. And our background in Linux firewalling and web application hosting for some 25 years has created that necessity. And as they say, you know, necessity is the mother of invention. And we've refined the product over many years, rolled it out into a full-featured product ready for market. And those customers will be upgraded to that to the new version. They're in the process of doing that now. So, you know, the origin story is very much one born out of necessity where the users of the application aren't necessarily your staff. They may be vendors or they may even be customers. So the barrier to entry has to be pretty low. You have no way of dictating how that might work. And another example for one of our original customers is in hospitals. They are ophthalmologists. They go to a hospital. The environment is restricted. They want to be able to get to the remote access environment of the specialist, but that's outside the hospital network. But they can't modify the hospital computers. The SOE doesn't allow for even admin rights. So the specialist is able to do his consultations from the hospital environment using their computers with minimal interaction with that machine.
So two things real quick because we're running out of time. First of all, you mentioned agents before. I presume they're agents that actually run on the boxes that are doing the ACLs. Like, so that's either going to be running on a firewall or running on a proxy or whatever. That's the agents. They're not for the users, correct?
That's right. Agents are back-end devices that update ACLs on the target machine.
Just wanted to confirm that for everybody listening.
And they run adjacent to whatever it is you want to modify.
But we should say also, just before we leave, that Knock Knock is still pretty new, right? Like, there are still a few rough edges on it. Like, I think we need to be realistic in saying that, right?
Yeah, I think that's fair enough. We're in active development. We recently added internationalization support. That's about to be rolled out. We picked up a number of European customers and we realized that translation's very helpful for users. We have an aggressive roadmap to add features. But yes, we're a small startup that is have a product that we feel is mature and ready for market. However, you know, we're keen to hear from our customers, keen to get it rolled out, keen to get it used in their environments.
There's no shame in it, Dave. You're an early stage startup. There's no shame in it.
We're getting it done, mate. We're getting it done.
All right, Dave Kempe, fabulous to talk to you. So happy to finally get this interview out. I'm absolutely stoked to be working with you. And to the moon. Let's go.
Thanks, Patrick. Love your work.
That was Dave Kempe there from Knock Knock, and that is spelled K-N-O-C, K-N-O-C. And pretty easy to find once you get the spelling right. Our third and final snake oiler today is iVerify. iVerify was originally spun up by Trail of Bits, but has since graduated into being a fully independent company. It's a mobile security platform that can run with or without MDM. And, you know, it does useful stuff. As you'll hear, they're really presenting this thing as being like EDR for mobile. It can find bad stuff. They do legit threat hunting. I spoke with Danny Rogers and Rocky Cole from iVerify about their platform, and here's what they had to say. And the first voice you hear is Danny.
It used to be that you would buy an iPhone out of the box and you can consider it secure unless you were, say, some, you know, super high level terrorist fugitive, right? Unless you're Osama bin Laden, you could basically consider this phone to be secure. And that kind of all changed in the last few years with the rise of this sort of mercenary commercialized spyware that now anyone with, you know, was it 50 grand, could rent the capability to pop an iPhone And all of a sudden you had to think about that. It was sort of an uncontrolled risk. And so the base technology within iVerify became a really great platform to build out what we're considering kind of the first real, you know, true mobile threat hunting company that's focused on this more advanced threat.
Essentially, what we've tried to do is the mobile security problem has just gotten more, you know, dire since the last time we checked in on iVerify. I mean, let me just give you a couple interesting data points. I don't know if you guys saw these two reports a couple weeks ago, one from Kaspersky and one from Google. Kaspersky said that about 40% of attacks these days are mobile attacks. Now, that's driven largely by adware, but a big piece of that is credential harvesting as well. And there were these series of reports from Meta and Google that emerged a couple weeks back too. And Google said that about 80% of zero days they caught in 2023 were related to commercial spyware vendors, and about half of all the zero days they found were related to mobile spyware on both Android and iOS. And, you know, I live and breathe mobile security for a living these days, but those numbers were frankly astonishing to me. And these data points to me suggest that essentially mobile is where desktop was about 15 years ago, which is to say, you know, about everyone was using antivirus software of some kind, but their computers were somehow always infected anyway. And the adversaries fundamentally had the upper hand and could just attack faster than defenders could repel them. And the problem demanded a fresh approach. And, you know, that approach looked a lot like CrowdStrike and a lot less like traditional antivirus. And so to answer your question, what we're trying to do is apply some of those same historical lessons to mobile. So what iVerify is today is it's a mobile threat hunting platform that offers a mobile EDR service that combines deep iOS and Android access, automated detections, and then expert analysis to scale advanced threat detection while staying true to our roots as a company that puts privacy at the center of everything we do.
Okay, so you mentioned that now it's about deep access and instrumentation, basically, and, you know, pulling telemetry and logs off off Android and iOS devices. That's hard though, right? Because iOS is notoriously opaque. So how on earth are you actually able to instrument an iPhone in a way that's actually going to tell you when there's an attacker messing with it?
Secret sauce a little bit, but no, that's been the big development work that we've done as our own company is take that base technology and build the threat hunting capability, which is essentially kind of productizing mobile forensics. So you know, using external tools, for example, to rapidly pull forensic data, you know, off the operating system to build heuristics, to pool data from kind of our collection of kind of naturally occurring honeypot. Like, one of the neat things that stood out to me when I joined is just how widely adopted and trusted this tool is among the frontline folks, right? The folks who are sort of most in the crosshairs of this, the most advanced threats. And so that gave us an opportunity to work collaboratively with that community to gather data and to build a sort of collective defense that if we all shared and pooled data, and this is not content, to be clear, like we're not pulling, you know, text messages and images and emails, right? Sure. What we're pulling is operating system metadata and process information and things like that.
So, but how, I guess my question is still, how are you getting that when Apple takes really deliberate steps to stop applications from being able to do that on iOS?
I mean, without getting into the details.
No, please. Get into the details.
Yeah, well, it's not that I mean, there's some of the secret sauce that we have in terms of how we access it. You know, some of it is using the same Apple interfaces that exist. I don't think we're doing anything particularly magic or particularly, like, we're not exploiting anything. We're not doing anything you're not supposed to do. We're just using a lot of the existing Apple interfaces, but really it's more around productizing it, right? It's around, you know, there are already mobile forensic tools that you can download. MVT is a great tool, but it's big and cumbersome, and you have to have a lot of tech savvy. So giving that to, like, a human rights activist on the front lines in Central Asia is a non-starter, right? Whereas if we can build a productized version that requires them to click two or three buttons and then all the data gets extracted and pooled and analyzed automatically, that's going to result in a lot more data.
Like I 100% see why you said previously, it's like, you know, if you had to sum up the pitch, it's like CrowdStrike for mobile phones, right? Like I absolutely get it. And you know, we do obviously need something like that. The question becomes though, like, have you actually caught stuff, commercial spyware in the wild with this tool?
Oh, yes. Yeah, very, very first thing we did was catch the latest copy of Pegasus, which we have and which we'll be presenting at Black Hat Asia very soon.
Nice!
But we've also, I think that the real story, though, is as we've deployed this across, you know, everything from think tanks to enterprises, we've caught a lot more stuff, too. I mean, Rock, you have stories of some of our customers catching all kinds of, like, you know, they're not as sexy, but they're just as valuable kind of information for enterprises in terms of identifying risk profile.
Yeah. I mean, here's one story that's frankly horrifying, I think, if you're a CISO. I mean, we have a customer who's, let's call them a large defense contractor. We had a detection the other day that, you know, just of a malicious application running on an Android phone. And we looked into it, and essentially the application looks like overtly that it was left there by a large carrier. But when you dig a little deeper, you know, we found out that it's the same app is running on about 300 devices in the enterprise. And
I know that what is this stuff called? It's the interface
bloatware kind of thing.
Bloatware, yeah.
There's a specific one. Anyway, I saw one of the Azimuth people do a talk on it like 10 years ago, and it was horrifying. But yeah.
Well, it's pretending to be like basically, or it is, or is pretending to be like a demo application that has. I mean, when you dive into it, it essentially has spyware-like capabilities. It's certainly persistent, and it's on about 300 devices floating around in this company's fleet. And here's the interesting part. These phones were sold to them by their supplier as brand new phones out of the box. So someone, there's either a supply chain vulnerability where someone's going around harvesting demo devices from a large carrier, shipping them overseas and selling them as new. And they have these, you know, essentially quasi-malicious applications that are sitting there waiting to be a backdoor for someone.
Well, the telco ordered more demo phones than they needed, and somehow they got, you know, packaged up. Like, something like that, I just think, looks like a stone-cold, you know, mistake somewhere.
The point is that, I mean, for starters, it was wild because we, you know, it was a carrier application for a carrier that didn't exist in that country, right? Yeah. It was like, it was a US carrier on a phone that they had bought and only ever used in the UK. I was like, what is this carrier even doing here? It doesn't exist here. But, you know, when we found the original malicious app, then they scanned the rest of their devices and found it on 300 other phones and realized that they'd been conned by their own mobile phone vendor, right? And then just created this huge gaping hole in their mobile security posture on these company-owned devices, right? Like, when you start to look under the hood, suddenly you see the Wild West when it comes to mobile devices. You know, we found employees running jailbroken phones. We found, you know, which employees are being stalked by their exes, right? Like, you just find all kinds of stuff, you know, that you would never that you would never have thought of as the original risk, right? Mm. And I think that's the real story. I mean, yes, we found Pegasus, but we've also found all these other kind of, you know, different kinds of vulnerabilities that we never expected to find.
Right. Yeah, and I imagine Danny, there's like a lot of crappy consumer apps with really bad SDKs and stuff. Do you alert on that stuff as well?
Yeah, I mean, it depends. Yeah. I mean, you know, no, we'll never claim to have 100% coverage, but certainly like malicious apps on Android, we cover, you know, jailbreaks on iPhones, just all kinds of different things that can be vulnerable. And we're adding to that list constantly too.
So look, another question, I guess, is which verticals is this? I mean, you mentioned a defense contractor. That is utterly unsurprising to me that the types of organizations that would be buying this are the ones that are concerned by, you know, nation level threats, you know, they're trying to prevent things like intelligence collection more so than crime, ransomware, BEC, mm-hmm. that sort of stuff. Is that about right?
I think there's two categories because we have this advanced detection capability. We have this threat hunting capability. So, you know, anywhere where someone's particularly worried about their threat profile, right? As you said, right? You have defense and government adjacent, right? Space industry, that kind of stuff. Also, cryptocurrency, kind of, you know, people, that whole industry, they keep huge amounts of money on their phones, right?
Yeah.
So anywhere that's a particularly like juicy target from either a, you know, economic or a counter-espionage perspective or whatnot. But remember, iVerify does come with from these sort of privacy roots, privacy first roots, right? And so there's a whole nother category of folks who don't, who say, like, I need some, as you kind of said at the outset, right? I need some sort of mobile security posture, but I don't want full-blown MDM because, say, I have, you know, 5,000 employees, BYOD, we need something to make sure that they're all doing some basic level of security hygiene, but they'll never let us put, you know, profiles, management profiles on their phones, or, you know, MDM is just too creepy or whatever it is. I mean, there are plenty of places where we deploy alongside MDM, but there are also plenty of places where we're used to achieve a basic security posture, like I was a user originally.
So what you're saying is it's in life and death cases and also compliance.
Well, it's compliance where you care about, like, where you care about privacy, or you care about your employees feeling comfortable on their own personal devices. Like,
yes, that's, of course.
What's neat is actually, and the overlap of the two is really interesting. Like, there's some.
Well, say, you can, like, do this so you don't have to do MDM. I mean, I don't even think exactly. It's about caring about your employees. It's just that MDM is a giant pain in the you know what.
Yeah, and you hear that a lot too. That we were talking to someone the other day who manages really large political campaigns in the United States, and he was essentially railing against the very large, I won't name them, but the very one of the biggest MDMs out there, if not the biggest, you can read between the lines and figure out who it is. He was essentially, you know, saying, I need a PhD in order to just figure out how to configure it so that it doesn't break my enterprise. Yeah. Right. Yeah. So it's this dual opportunity of there are CISOs out there who think that MDMs erode trust between their office and their enterprise, and they'd rather spend their political capital on something like two-factor authentication, which I think is totally fair. And then there's this kind of other, there's this other aspect of it, of operational efficiency, which is people, they want mobile endpoint security, but they also don't want to have to get a PhD or hire a solution engineer in order to implement it.
All right, Danny Rogers, Rocky Cole, thank you so much for joining me to talk through the latest with iVerify. I wish you all the best with it.
Thank you very much. Pleasure to be here.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
That was Rocky Cole and Danny Rogers from iVerify there, and you can find them at iverify.io. And that is it for this edition of the Snake Oilers podcast. I do hope you enjoyed it. I'll be back soon enough with more Risky Biz for you all, but until then, I've been Patrick Gray. Thanks for listening.